Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, so we have Howie Carr in this week. He's on RKO, still obviously all over New England. He's in the Radio Hall of Fame, which I think I'm not in yet. To my knowledge, I will be soon, I would have to think. He's written the Brothers Bulge. We all know fucking. I'm gonna give Howie's bio to you people. If you've been around here, you know Howie Carr is. I know Ben. You know him.
I know him. I like the guy.
Yeah, me too. I don't know him that well. I've never really had a problem with Howie. And his book is. You're gonna like this book. His book is wild. Kennedy Babylon, Volume 1: A Century of Scandal and Depravity. Howie will promote it enough in the interview. I won't do that for him. I will say that I was somewhat skeptical going into the book, but it is a fucking blast. If you want to read about the Kennedys. Wild, gossipy, insane stuff. I'm telling you, you cannot go wrong with this book. It is a lot of fun.
Well, this is the perfect kind of book that Howie can write, too, because he can get all this information.
Nobody else could write this book. That's a good point. Nobody else can write a book like this.
And how could you not enjoy reading about sex scandals? Everyone loves reading about sex scandals.
Yes, and there are plenty of them, and there's drugs, and there's murder, and there's death, and there's Marilyn Monroe, and there's JFK. I mean, the whole thing. The whole thing is crazy. The Ted Kennedy stuff is my favorite part of it. But Howie came in, we talked a little bit about the state of radio in newspapers. Did a lot in the book. I think we bounced around. I don't know how long the conversation went, Ben.
About 45 minutes.
I thought it was pretty good. I enjoyed it. I actually enjoyed it a lot.
Do you think we'll ever see a movie that kind of goes at the Kennedys in this way?
Well, here's the problem. Next year, this Chappaquiddick movie is coming out, and it's like, and Howie talks about it in the book, is it's like sort of like almost like a favorable Ted Kennedy version of Chappaquiddick, which seems kind of crazy, but... That's what he talks about in this book. There's this halo effect still around the Kennedys, which is insane. When you look at the truth in books like this and other stuff I've read, they are nothing like people want them to be. It's weird. So, no. And I don't think you could do it in 2 hours or 3 hours either. It would have to be, like I said today, we're talking about, shit.
Black Mass.
No, that was in the podcast. On the air today, we're talking about something. And I said it would be a great FX miniseries like OJ. Oh, Aaron Hernandez would be great 6 or 7 part, whether it's, we imagine Belichick and Kraft and... All that shit that goes on in that. This would be a great, the Kennedys, if they did it right, would be a great, 8-part FX series. You could do that. That you could do. 2 hours would be tough.
Yeah, the people you need to talk to is actually, and I know some of them, some of the doormen at Cure, the nightclub.
Oh, sure.
They have good stories, but they feel like they can't say anything.
Well, that's the other thing is distance, too. Like, now you can do it with the Kennedys because everybody's talked or they're dead.
They're
like,
dead.
If you wait 10 or 15 years with Aaron Hernandez, when people start, getting away from it, and they know Hernandez is not ever going to get out, and they know he's not, the people he, would use are also out of the picture. People start talking, I think.
We've never seen the Ray Carruth story.
That's true. That's true, too. But yeah, this is excellent. Howie did a great job. The book, again, I can't promote it enough. Kennedy Babylon, definitely worth picking up. It is Howie Carr on Enough About Me. All right, the book's Kennedy Babylon, as we said in the intro. Howie Carr is here. Howie Carr is a fellow. Is Intercom hater strong or no?
I get along. I get along with everybody. I have the same motto as Al Capone. We don't want any trouble.
Well,
that's my new
motto. That's what I'm saying. It's not your old motto.
No.
But you're a different man now? You're a changed man?
I'm just trying to get along.
Are you enjoying your second run at RKO?
Yeah, I'm having fun. I have my own studio. I'm a free agent.
Yeah, where do you broadcast out of?
I broadcast out of Needham.
How many stations are you on?
128. I'm on about 28, 29, depending on how you count translators.
And it was obviously November was gold for you. If Hillary wins, I know you can have fun going after Hillary, but having Trump win is for everyone.
Look at the January numbers.
I saw them. Yeah.
Usually the talk stations, news stations take a dive. After a presidential election, this time they went up.
And you're a Mar-a-Lago member and friend of Trump and everything?
Right. I was down there last Thursday night. I dropped off a copy of the book for him. I hope he got it.
What do you do? There's no golf there, right?
No, the golf is over on the other side of the bridge.
So what do you do?
It's
just
in hang
out by a pool or something?
Yeah, they have a pool. But, you go in for dinner. It's a really nice place to eat dinner. It's a lovely location. Mar-a-Lago, that means from sea to lake in Spanish. So That's what it is, and it's just a beautiful place to hang out.
Have you ever seen a figure in your life that has caused more people to lose their mind than Donald J. Trump?
Oh no,
it's I know you do it. We do it every day. It is unbelievable. And I'm not a fan of his. You're obviously a supporter, a fan of his. But to watch people lose their mind and blame everything on this guy, everything is ironically exactly why he won.
Right. Exactly. And they don't understand that when people read these crazy tweets by Chelsea Handler or Robert B. Schumer
or whoever.
Yeah, that just amuses people.
Right. Meryl Streep.
The more crazy they go, the more solid his base of support is.
Is Trump in any way similar to any member of the Kennedy family? Other than wealth.
He likes women.
He likes women, yes. That's what I was getting at. Yeah. that's what I was getting to.
But I don't think he's as out of control as any members of the Kennedy family, including up to the present generation. You know, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Yeah, with what was her name? What's the actress? Cheryl Hines? Is that
yeah, Cheryl
to?
Hines. Right. But also the fact that you know he kept the diary.
Yes,
of his conquests, and the New York Post got a hold of the diary and printed it. I mean, he's as bad as his grandfather.
Do you feel like though, and this is why this book is great, because you go back and even a guy like me who pays attention, have read books on it. You know, you open a page and you find things you've never read before. Do you feel like the Kennedy magic, whatever you want to call it, people like my grandmother believed in, my grandfather believed in growing up here.
Right.
Do you feel like that's gone, though? That's gone to a large extent for people, say, my generation and younger, people in their 40s and 30s. It doesn't carry what it meant to my parents.
I think it's dissipated to a large degree. I mean, I have a chapter in the book about the other Kennedys, about these people whose name was Kennedy.
Oh, the guys who ran for office.
Yeah, they just got elected. There was a guy who was a state treasurer for 6 years.
Right.
His name was John F. Kennedy. He never spent a dime on a campaign. But that's over now. You look at the Senate race in 2010 that Scott Brown won.
Right.
You know, they put in a Joe Kennedy there,
right.
And he only got 1% of the vote.
Right.
So maybe fake Kennedys can't make it anymore. I mean, Joe Kennedy II is doing well. I mean, he's not a bad guy.
Everyone says he's a pretty good guy.
Yeah, he is a decent guy.
What was your relationship like with Ted Kennedy?
It was obviously he hated me. You know,
right?
He tried to make Rupert Murdoch sell the Boston Herald because I was calling him Fat Boy.
He attached a rider to something, right?
Senate budget bill anonymously. He got, Fritz Hollings to put it from South Carolina, the guy who put the Confederate flag at the top of the state house in Columbia, South Carolina. That's how liberal he was. But he put that in. He wanted Rupert to sell it. He hated me, and I remember talking to him once. I said, you know, Senator, I don't know if you know this, Senator, but I spent some time in Palm Beach when I was a kid. My father was the assistant manager of the Breakers, and he said, hey, that's how I learned to drive, driving my grandfather, Honey Fitch, down to the Breakers, and he would sit in the lobby there for hours at a time because, you know, they didn't want Honey Fitch checking into the place, you know.
Right.
The Skakels wrecked the rooms at the Breakers. But, you know, I thought to myself, I don't know if that's really a good advertisement for Palm Beach driving, you know, that Ted Kennedy learned to drive there.
So how do you put together a book like this, Howie? I read it and it's got so many sources and so many things that we don't know about and so many, you know, little stories. How do you do it? Where do you start? How does it work? How do you accumulate these sources? What happens?
I've been reading about them obviously for my entire life and just, you know, compiling it in my head. And then I went out and I got every book I could on the Kennedys and I read every book. And then what I also knew was that the Herald, Boston Herald, where I work, would give me access to their photo files.
Sure.
And they have some amazing photographs in there, as you can see.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew that I could put together the photos and this these stories that nobody, they're not suppressed, but nobody knows about these things. Like the lawsuit that the wiretapper of Marilyn Monroe's house.
Oh, and she
filed.
When
and
she
the,
died?
Yeah, she. Yeah, yeah he had recordings of her final meeting with Bobby Kennedy and Peter Lawford, and Bobby is screaming at her, and he had all these tapes, and they were actually confiscated by the Manhattan District Attorney in 1966. He sent his state police outside of Manhattan to get the tapes to save Bobby, but he had backup copies, and he filed a lawsuit to get back the originals. And it's in the New York Times. I mean, this isn't like some, you know, conspiratorial story. He filed a lawsuit to get the tapes back of Bobby Kennedy and Marilyn Monroe on the last day of her life.
It does seem that nobody in history, no family in American history has been enabled by the media as much as the Kennedys, though. I mean, I don't think that's disputable, is it?
No, it's not. In volume two, I'm going to have a whole chapter on the media and the Kennedys. But you're right. There's a story, and again, this is it's in one of the Nixon the books about the Nixon tapes in the Oval Office. He and Henry Kissinger are discussing it, discussing Ted Kennedy, and apparently Ted Kennedy one time there was one of the Ford heirs, the auto company, was married to this really good-looking woman. I can't remember her name. She was in the Carlisle Hotel, and Ted was there, and so Ted just came screaming up to her room, and he's knocking on the door. She says, "Go away, I'm going to call the cops and you'll get in the newspaper." And she's knocking the door, let me in. And she says, "I'm going to call the cops." He says, "Doesn't matter if you call the cops, there won't be anything in the newspapers. I control the newspapers." And Henry Kissinger tells this story to Nixon. And Nixon says, "It's true. He's the president of the United States, and he can't believe that Ted Kennedy can get away with this. Look, they killed the whole story. I got it in the book about Marilyn, in the chapter about Marilyn Monroe. They had a 27-minute documentary was going to run on Marilyn Monroe's death and JFK and RFK and their connections. They had interviews with Sam Yorty, the former mayor, the former police chief,
right?
Yeah, and the maid. They had it nailed down." And Geraldo Rivera was involved in the story.
Right.
They killed it.
Right.
They totally killed it, and they fired Geraldo Rivera.
And there was also a book, and it wasn't like right around, there was this Marilyn Monroe's Last Days, this book that got spiked, too. Is that right?
Yeah, there was a guy named Capel wrote a book, The Last Days of Marilyn Monroe. It's really interesting, The Strange Death of Marilyn Monroe.
That's what
I have
it's
a
called,
picture
right.
of it in there.
Do you get your hands on that book?
I did, yeah. Right. You know, it's amazing what you can do with the internet. I bought it for $10.
Right.
I'll bet you could buy a copy right now. Maybe it's gone up to $20 now that people know it exists.
It's a good read, though, or no?
Oh, yeah. It's a really good read.
So it was out there. It was out there in public.
Yeah,
and
he just spells out, he says, she was involved with a man whose name cannot be mentioned because his brother was the martyr. It was now regarded as a martyr.
Well, obviously.
And so J. Edgar Hoover sends Bobby a memo and says, this book is coming out. And they ended up auditing this guy. Mm-hmm. And Richard Nixon later on released a list of the people that the Kennedys had audited, for the IRS. And he was on the list. And Nixon actually mentioned it on 60 Minutes once in the 80s. But again, nobody knows about it. It's all forgotten.
But what role does the Globe play in this whole thing? If you're going to place blame, what role is the Globe? It seems to me that every time something happens, the Globe, Chappaquiddick, no matter what, William Kennedy Smith, no matter what happens, the Globe is giving the Kennedys
a
pass, right?
Well, through the 70s and 80s, every time Ted Kennedy would be running for re-election, the readers of Massachusetts would be treated to these stories. Ted Kennedy turning his life around.
Right.
You know,
right.
Ted Kennedy, the liberal lion.
He's losing weight. He's getting remarried. He looks different. I mean, like you said, it's amazing. Chappaquiddick happens, right? I mean, he kills a woman. Essentially, he murdered.
They didn't murder her. He killed her.
Right,
yeah,
he killed her. He didn't murder her. Right, she died.
Negligent.
Right. So he goes.
Homicide or manslaughter.
So how long did he wait before he went to the police after that?
11 hours.
11 hours. He made how many phone calls?
22.
Was it Steve Smith and the rest of those people? Was he still
around?
Well,
he didn't have Steve Smith's number, so he called one of his
mistresses.
He called
a woman, right?
He called
correct.
His mistress. I think her name was Helga Wagner down
That's
in Palm
right.
Beach.
Yes, right. So she connects him. Goes in and basically, you know, does the whole thing. And then you're right. You look at the Globe. What was the headline in the Globe the next day?
Senator wandered in days for 11 hours. I looked at that headline.
I
said, I cannot put this in the book. How can I not put it in the book?
And he called the Kopechne family. He didn't know her last name when he initially reported it, right?
Right, but he found out her last name.
And then he went to court. And...
Well, first he went to the Cape Cod Hospital to get checked out.
Right.
They told him, you're fine. And he said, okay, I'm fine, but I need a neck brace.
Right.
So when he goes to the funeral in the Skakel family jet, because, you know, they have a lot of money, too.
Right.
They own this carbon company on the Midwest. He's wearing the neck brace.
Yeah.
So that, you know, to build up the sympathy.
Right.
And then he goes on TV and, you know, makes the speech.
Right.
And he has he goes on WHDH at the Channel 7 at the time. And why does he go on Channel 7? Because it's owned by or Channel 5, excuse me, Channel 5. It's owned by the Herald, and the Herald is run by a guy named Hal Clancy, who mm-hmm. used to work for Joe Kennedy.
Right.
So everything's got to be
It seems like everything gets back to that eventually.
Right.
One way
everything
or another,
gets everything.
A judge or right.
Yeah, there's yeah. a the fix is in right. everywhere along the line, right. and the guy who introduces him is Jack Hines, the you know the anchor at Channel 5, whose father is the mayor. Was
right.
the mayor
right.
of Boston.
Right.
And so Ted goes, they've got all these cue cards up for him to read, you know, and then he looks away, and then he finishes his statement, and he says, "And now I'd like to say something from my heart to the people of Massachusetts." And he looks over, and there's another guy with cue cards, and he's speaking from the heart to another set of cue cards. You know who told me that story? Jack Hines.
Really?
Yeah, I used to work with him at Channel 56.
Right. What's amazing is he's elected senator, I could be wrong, 6 more times after that. Is that right?
Right.
After Chappaquiddick, after
yes.
he does this, 6 more times. We talked about it here in our ill-fated first attempt to tape this podcast like 15 minutes ago. My stance is if this happened today in 2017 to a popular sort of senator who had the backing of the media, that he wouldn't be able to get away with it. The Twitter would bring him down. Social media would bring him down. But you don't think that may be the case.
I think it's an interesting question. I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure he could get away with it.
I mean, Anthony Weiner world, right, that we live in now. You think Ted Kennedy with the social media, you don't think he'd be sending pictures of his junk to women? And then a woman may be upset. You might send text messages if he's shit-faced. I feel like he wouldn't survive that now. It's good timing for him.
You know? Dying was a good career move for Ted Kennedy?
Well, a guy with those appetites in this world today, I don't think survives. Donald Trump is president, too.
Yeah, he might have been wise enough. I mean,
was he smart?
How many people? Not smart, but crafty. Somebody said he would have been a good Irish bartender. I think that's a probably pretty good
right.
description of what he would have done. I don't know that he would have gotten caught tweeting like that, like Carlos Danger did.
No, but when he texts a picture of his dick to some 22-year-old who, you know, he winds up burning later on.
Yeah,
and
that's
she sends
true.
It out
that's
her.
True. I mean, he got caught. He did get caught, and I couldn't get this picture in the book because I couldn't find out who owned it to buy it. But right. you know, there's that famous picture from the 1980s of him on the boat
in
the Mediterranean.
Right, you reference it in the book,
and he's on top of this girl from Marymount College where Joan went. That's another recurring thing.
What's
it,
Miss Porter's, right?
And, yeah, Miss Porter's with Jack Kennedy. I mean, he screwed like 3-4 women from this one school. I mean, it's amazing. And so Ted Kennedy was on top of this 22-year-old girl, right. and the paparazzi got all these pictures, and they put them out over there. And there's the famous story. Rush Limbaugh likes to tell the story. Howell Heflin, the big fat senator from Alabama, he sees it, and he says, "It's good to see the senior senator from Massachusetts done changed his position on offshore drilling."
Do you miss the Kennedys, though? I mean, just say foil.
I we used to have a recurring bit on my show, which was The Wizard of Oz.
Right.
And we would get Kennedy, right. and we would just have a contest, and you would have to tell how many times he said "ah."
Right.
I miss things like that, and. Yeah, they are easy pickings. I remember I started off the book with the Ted Kennedy press conference in May of 1991.
Oh, after William Kennedy Smith?
Yeah, William Kennedy Smith. He was at MIT, and he comes out into this courtyard. And I swear, it was like a breezy spring, early May afternoon. He comes out, and you could immediately smell the booze.
Were you there?
In an open air thing.
Yeah.
And you know, we were all recording it.
Right.
And he just is stumbling. All those quotes in there in that first chapter.
Verbatim.
They're all verbatim.
So why didn't somebody else write then? Not you, but other people. Why didn't they write? Okay, this guy is obviously shit faced while he's making that speech. Is that just a legal thing, or are they just protecting him?
I think they were protecting him. I mean, he sort of hung himself with his own words. I mean, well, you know, I also went into there Jerry Williams, who was the longtime talk show host on WRKO, he was when he was trying to force the sale of the Herald mm-hmm. in 1988 or 89, Ted Kennedy one day was listening to him, and he was so angry that he called in to the show, and he was driving down on the Cape, and as most people listening to this probably know, there's something about booze, you know, if you're in a moving vehicle or, you know, whatever, it kind of like compounds the effects.
Yes.
So he's driving and apparently drinking. So as the interview goes on with Jerry Williams, he's slurring his words more and more, and he's mixing it up. He finally says, You know, I don't have to take this dribble, not dribble, dribble. Dribble. I don't have to take this dribble from Rudolph Murdoch.
Do you have any level of sympathy for the family, though? I mean, look at all the deaths, and obviously, you know, they've been responsible for some stuff, too, but whether it's JFK or RFK or kids not being, you know, little kids that have died or plane crashes, do you have any sympathy for the family at all? Do you think that part of that is part of the reason why Ted Kennedy was so fucked up is not just, you know, the fact that he was so enabled, but his brothers died. You know, he had nephews who died.
Yeah, I know.
Tragedy in his own family, obviously. Now, I don't have a lot of sympathy for the guy, I'll be honest, but I wonder, you as a guy who's chronicled it and been around, do you ever think of it that way? There's a reason why these kids are so screwed up.
They've done a lot of damage.
Oh, no question. No question.
And I don't really have a lot of sympathy for them, honestly. I mean, they were screwed up. I mean, I guess you could, you know, a lot of this stuff I think you can blame on the old man, Joe Kennedy.
No question.
I said that in the book, too.
Well, how about the mom?
She was extremely distant.
And yeah, a big part of the book, right? She's sort of a side figure in the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, she is. But, you know, some people have said, you know, I don't know if they're armchair psychologists or what, but one of Jack's problems was she was so distant. And,
right.
You know, when they would come back from prep school or college, they never had their own rooms. It was like a dorm. The houses were like dorms.
Right.
They just throw you into a room here and a room there. And so there was never any familial closeness or anything like that. But I think one of the problems, and I went into it, is that Joe Kennedy never really brought them into the real world. He just wanted them to be, you know, statesmen,
right,
or whatever. You know, none of them learned the family business. And he told Tip O'Neill, and this I got this from Tip's by autobiography. He said after he was elected in 1952, Joe Kennedy came to him and said, "Never expect anything from my kids," meaning Jack and Bobby,
right,
because, you know, they've been so pampered that they think everybody is just, you know, there to service them.
Right.
And that's so they never, I think that's one reason why they got into trouble with guys like Momo Giancana, the Chicago mobster, and J. Edgar Hoover. Because they never understood that these guys were powerful figures in their own
right.
They didn't know any better. I mean, to them, it's just another valet.
Right. But it is amazing, like, the sex part of it. Like I was saying to you before, I feel like, you know, each of the Kennedys basically would fuck the same woman, and it's also possible the dad fucked her, and they moved on, or Kennedy would let, you know, Dave Powers fuck her or blow them or whatever. I mean, it's fucking, it is, the treatment of women is unbelievable. And like you said, it's not one of these things where you just randomly wrote it. I mean, it is in there in history, but we have chosen as a nation to ignore it. Because Camelot is sort of, you know, nicer to think about than him forcing, is it Mimi Alford, is that right?
Mimi Alford,
yeah. On
his
Powers.
His 19-year-old intern.
Right.
His 19-year-old intern at the White House, and he deflowered her. She was a virgin.
Right.
And he thought she was knocked up, and he said he has... And she says, I think I'm pregnant, Mr. President. And he says, okay, Dave Powers will call you. And then Dave Powers gives her the number of an abortionist in New Jersey. So he's immediately put like two steps between himself and an abortion. Didn't need to be one, ultimately. But I mean, they were used to doing that. There was a woman, Diane DeVay, who was she was involved with several of them. And, She went to Harvard. She went to Radcliffe at the time, and McGeorge Bundy told, he was a dean at Harvard, mm-hmm, at the time. He said, Jack, you're on the board of overseers here at Harvard. You're a senator. You're running for president.
Right.
You can't be screwing a 19-year-old
right
co-ed at Radcliffe.
But the truth is, he could.
He could.
Right.
He could. Dave Powers was picking her up.
Right.
Dave Powers was his East Coast pimp. Peter Lawford was his West Coast pimp, his brother-in-law. So he gets elected president. McGeorge Bundy comes down. He's the national security advisor or something like that. So Jack says, "Okay, I'm gonna send over someone to work in your office." And he says, "Who is it?" Diane DeVay. he's just letting McGeorge Bundy know who's the boss.
I when you read books like this, I think of movies too. I think of like a movie like 13 Hours, which I'm sure you watched.
Yeah,
and they make Kevin Costner, who plays Kenny O'Donnell,
out
to be this heroic guy who's trying to save the world. And then you read this book and you read other stuff about O'Donnell. And, you know, put it this way, in 13 Hours, I don't think he has a drink in the movie. You know, he's out there to save the world and, you know, the Bay of Pigs and all that. But that's not reality.
No, he was just, I mean, it's a sad story. I mean, he was a very powerful guy,
right.
And then overnight it's gone, and he was boozing it up on the plane from Dallas back to Washington.
Oh, in 63, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, he ended up in the late 70s. I think he died in 77.
He and his wife, I think, both struggled,
he
right?
He was so loaded, they would see him, like, on Beacon Hill right around the State House, and he would be talking to himself, just drunk in the middle of the day.
Right.
And I mean, that's the kind of problems he had. And there were stories too that he was dipping into the cash in the campaign fund for the 64 reelection. They were supposed to have a come to Jesus meeting with him on Monday, November 25th, 1963, to discuss if he'd been stealing money or not. And he'd been spotted that summer in the bars, on the Cape, just going, you know, I'm the one who keeps that administration running. Those guys are just out for pussy, and I'm keeping it going. And a Secret Service agent reported back, and the Secret Service agent, they found, somehow Kenny O'Donnell found out who the Secret Service agent was who busted him for his drunken ravings at this bar. And the guy was shipped out to Anchorage, Alaska or somewhere. He didn't know that this had happened, you know, for 25 years until Seymour Hersh told him when he was writing The Dark Side of Camelot.
If you had to pick, if you just had to pick one, if I had to say to you, who is the biggest scumbag in the whole Kennedy circle, the whole family, in its history, who would you pick?
Joe.
You would pick Joe.
The old man.
You would pick the old man, yeah.
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 The old man. Kirk, the book was running so long, I had to cut out the chapter about his anti-Semitism.
They're going to be in volume two?
Yeah, but it'll be in volume two. But I wrote 7,000 words just basically quoting him in his letters. And you know, the amazing thing about the...
So where do you see these letters?
You know, let me tell you the story here. His granddaughter, Amanda Smith, William Kennedy Smith's sister, Amanda Smith put together his letters in like 2001.
Right.
And I don't know what she edited out, but she didn't edit out any of this anti-Semitic stuff. He used to write letters to people, and he would go down this list of New Dealers, you know, people who worked for FDR that he thought had screwed him, you know, prevented his rise to national prominence. And he would go, you know, so-and-so married to a Jew.
Right.
You know, so-and-so. Mother was a Jew. And then he would underline it and capitalize it and italicize it. He was rabid. I know he had Jewish friends like Carol Rosenblum, the former NFL owner.
Oh, Rams, right.
Died. He drowned.
Right.
And Arthur Kroc in the New York Times, you know, was kind of like a hireling. He paid him to, you know, write nice stories about him. He had Jewish associates. But he basically hated Jews.
He essentially raped women, right? Or sexually.
Well, he was the first one. I mean, Pamela Harriman, the famous fundraiser married to Averill Harriman, the former governor of New York. She was raped by him. She was visiting Kathleen Kick Kennedy, who died in a plane crash in the 40s. She was visiting him after World War II. At the time, she was Winston Churchill's former daughter-in-law. Think about that. Winston Churchill's daughter-in-law. She's staying at the estate in Palm Beach. Joe Kennedy sneaks into the room and rapes her at night.
So how do you know that?
She told the story.
Right.
She told the story. Truman Capote put it in his last novella, Answered Prayers.
Yeah. Right,
it's right there. And I know Truman Capote was a strange guy, and he had his own problems. But I don't think that was a lie. I think that was the truth.
It seems like that anti-Semitism. I could be wrong. I don't see it attributed much to JFK, but certainly to RFK.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Oh,
am I right about that with JFK though? I don't see.
No. There's not. You know, he makes remarks about. You know, he uses the N-word every once in a while. He called former governor Furcolo a dago. You know, there are occasional things. He said, you know, he was going to punish somebody by sending them to making them an ambassador to a boogie republic in Africa. That's a quote that exists.
Right.
But no, he was not. No, he was not nearly. I don't think there was any recorded anti-Semitism from JFK.
But RFK.
But RFK. Oh yeah, he hated Jews. He hated Roy Cohn. He hated Roy Cohn, who was, you know, the aide to Joe McCarthy.
Who was tied in RFK, obviously.
Yeah, they were. I mean, they were both. They were like competing for McCarthy's professional advancement.
Is one of RFK's kids? Is that
Kathleen? Kathleen. They try to bury that.
McCarthy was the godfather.
Yeah, Kathleen is the former lieutenant governor of Maryland, and she's the eldest child of RFK. And McCarthy was her godfather. And Bobby actually went to the funeral of Joe McCarthy, and supposedly he cried. His secretary said it was the only time she ever saw him cry in the office was when Joe McCarthy died. But, you know, he hated Cohn because not only was he a Jew, but he was a homosexual.
Right.
And he hated homosexuals as
right.
well. But Dr. Feelgood, that's the famous
sure.
doctor who
Big
was giving
the book, yeah.
Oh yeah, he was huge. And he was giving these injections to JFK, and supposedly gave his first injection to JFK. It was like a combination of speed and barbiturate.
This is supposedly for the back.
Supposedly for the back,
right.
But I mean, this was just he was just giving these to all the celebs
right.
in
and
New
also,
York.
And also, JFK Jr. thinks was a significant factor in his mom dying. Right.
Right. Because yeah. this stuff was just full of all kinds of crap.
Right.
That he was putting into these shots, which he was given to Jackie as well.
But go ahead with RFK and him. Yeah.
So RFK. So one day the Dr. Feelgood and who was Jewish. He was
right.
a German refugee from the Nazis. And his friend, who was also Jewish, they're down in the White House because at JFK's behest. It's
right.
not like they've jumped the fence, right?
Right.
JFK wants them to come. JFK asked the guy, Dr. Feelgood, at one point to move into the White House so he could get the shots right immediately. So RFK sees him in the halls and says, "What are you fucking kikes?" Can I say that?
Sure, you can. Yeah.
I'm quoting RFK.
Oh, I understand.
He says, "What are you doing in the White House? Get back to New York where you Jews belong." And so Dr. Feelgood was obviously deeply offended by what RFK said. So he cut off his brother. So I don't guess I have to tell you what that means.
So in this book a lot, you know, you reference a lot of things, but it does seem to me that you are careful that, like, for example, if somebody is selling their story or if it's in the Inquirer, you want that. No, like, I'm not sure that you necessarily believe every story in this book, every single one. Is that accurate or no? You know what I'm saying?
I'm not sure about some.
It seems
of
like you want to preface, like, you know, just so you know, this was sold to the Inquirer. Somebody did, right? For some down in their luck.
That was
you know what I'm talking about?
That was the story about Mary Pinchot Meyer, another one of his girlfriends,
right.
Who turned JFK on to pot.
My point is, I can't imagine, like, the stuff. You must have stuff that you say, you know what, I can't print this. I'm not believing it.
Some of this stuff must be insane. Yeah, there's some of the stuff that is crazy. I mean, but I wanted to make sure, you know, I didn't use footnotes, but I tried to preface everything, like when they talked about in the book The Senator, which was written by a guy named Richard Burke, who worked for Ted Kennedy, and he said that the other aides to Ted Kennedy used to spend weekends sometimes editing the JFK tapes from the Oval Office, and they would erase stuff from Marilyn Monroe. Marilyn Monroe would be calling in. They'd be going, "Oh, man, you wouldn't believe what JFK and Marilyn Monroe used to talk about." But, you know, or again, here's an interesting story.
Sure.
Son of the owner of the National Enquirer says that Maxine Cheshire, who was the gossip columnist for the Washington Post, sold the National Enquirer a story that was totally nailed down, saying that Mary Jo Kopechne was pregnant at the
right.
time of her death.
Yeah.
And Pope wrote in his book, I forget the title of it.
Though the mom denied it, right?
No,
Kopechne's mom denied that she was pregnant.
Kopechne's mom said, "Oh, her period had just started."
A couple
started.
Days before.
But they rushed the body off the island before they could be an autopsy, and then when they wanted to exhume the body later in the year to do an autopsy, they refused. The judge, who had a bust of JFK in his office, refused to allow it. But Pope says flat out that they had the documentation that she was pregnant.
How many people would you deal with, like, in just doing your show every day and writing this book, and in your life, just being around here, being a guy who was, you know, trying to tell the truth about this family? How many people would you deal with that were like, say, my grandmother, who just did not want to believe these things? They thought that the Kennedys were golden.
Oh, my family was the same way.
Yeah, were you growing up?
Yeah.
Did you think that?
You know, when I was a kid, when I was like 8 years old, when JFK was elected, it was, you know, there's never been a Catholic president.
Right. You were in Maine,
never
right?
Been, yeah, there's never, Portland.
Right.
There's never been an Irish president, you know. It was like being in Boston. That's like suburban
sure.
Boston.
Sure.
And, you know, I thought about that. And yeah, that's great. We're going to, you know, we'll have a president and all that. And by the time I was about 10, my father had worked in Palm Beach since the 1920s, you know, and he knew Joe. I mean, he knew him. And he told me a story once about Joe Kennedy, that there was this beautiful woman who worked at the Breakers in one of the shops.
Yeah.
You know? And so one day she came to my father. This was in the middle of the season, because back then the Breakers was only open 3-4 months. That was right before air conditioning.
Right.
And this was like, and he was one of the few guys who had a car, because he was at the, he was like the assistant manager. And she said, "Del," that was my father's name, "can you drive me over to the train station tomorrow? I'm leaving town." Mm-hmm. And he said, "What are you leaving town for?" You know, in those days, you know, if you quit in the middle of the season, you'd be blackballed from any. You're done in the resort hotel business. So you can't be quitting. You're out of it. Why are you leaving? And she says, "I can't take it anymore. Joe Kennedy, the old man, is stalking me. I can't take it." She was like this beautiful 20-something woman.
Right.
And how? And he told me this story. I couldn't believe it. You know, because I'd read all this crap too. I believed in Camelot.
Right. So how old were you then when RFK died? So
when RFK died,
teenager.
Yeah, I was 16. That was the day Deerfield Academy graduation. I was a junior. And, you know, cast a real pall on the graduation ceremony.
Were you old enough at that point? Were you still naive to it, or did you understand?
I didn't know about Marilyn Monroe.
Right.
But I mean, I knew that I knew that they were a pretty ruthless family.
Yeah.
Bobby seems somewhat different than the others.
How do you mean?
I think. You know, I do think he changed a little bit. You know, I think his anti-Semitism over the years diminished.
Yeah.
Like one of his top aides when he died was a guy named Adam Walensky. Mm-hmm. And he was Jewish, obviously. Right. So I think Bobby was changing a little bit. And again, he was becoming he was very liberal. But I just.
Do you think he would have won that year when you look back on it now?
No, he was not going to win. I think he was going down. I mean,
right.
You know, Hubert Humphrey was not taken, the vice president was not taking part in the primaries, but he was just rounding up all the delegates who were picked in the smoke-filled rooms at the time. It was going to be Hubert Humphrey. He was going to lose. But, you know, now you never know. I mean, everybody likes to, you know, fantasize that he would have been elected president.
You know, it's crazy. If he hadn't got sick and he was still alive and relatively healthy now, Ted Kennedy would be senator. He'd
still
be senator.
Absolutely.
I mean, how old would he be now?
He would be like 60. He'd be like 85, 84, 85.
He'd probably still be in office.
Yeah.
And he'd win. Even in this state still today, he would win, right?
Absolutely.
Isn't that insane? Isn't that wild?
It is. It is crazy. I mean, look at that Caroline Kennedy. I mean, they're trying to line her up to run for the Senate. They're trying to move Gillibrand out.
She's already
run
failed
for president.
At it, though. I mean, clearly.
Yeah. She has, and she was a lousy ambassador. She apparently the embassy in Tokyo was a total disaster under her management.
Is she? Would you consider, like, you know, obviously we think of these other kids in this family, other stuff. Do you consider her a bad person though? I feel like you feel different about JFK Jr. and Caroline than you do say towards Robert Kennedy's kids. I mean, they just haven't done as much stuff.
Yeah, I think Caroline is a very entitled type person.
Yeah.
I think she's kind of like Chelsea Clinton.
Right.
Yeah, you know, just she feels that she's owed this. That's another thing about the Kennedys, that they, you know, it's like if they have an office, they think they can come back. You know, once they get the deed to the office, they just rent it. Everybody else can be evicted whenever they want. You know, it's JFK's house seat, which becomes Joe Kennedy the second's house seat. And the Senate seat, Ted Kennedy's Senate seat. I mean, I think they think that eventually it's going to go to Joe Joe Jr.
Right.
You have Bobby Kennedy's Senate seat in New York. I think they think that's going to go to Caroline Kennedy. And even the treasurer's job, you know, which was held by the fake Kennedy, John Francis Kennedy. They tried to give that to Joe Kennedy back in 76, take it away from 78, take it away from Bob Crane.
What a disastrous run Joe Kennedy had for governor, though.
Oh, right.
That's a great chapter in the book. I mean, what a friggin' disaster.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, what else was going to happen, you know, when he had, you know, he got hit by a double whammy. I mean, his brother is screwing the babysitter, the 14-year-old babysitter. And his wife is writing this tell-all book about how he
annulment?
Bullied her. And the annulment that she didn't even know about.
But he was also a horrendous candidate, too. I mean, on his own, he couldn't. It sounds like he's another guy.
He was the original Wizard of Oz on my show. We used to run cuts of him. Yeah, he was a terrible candidate.
What is your thoughts right now of the current state of newspapers? Now, obviously, you're old school. You know, we read you in the Herald all the time. Do you think that newspapers will survive another 10, 15, 20? I think Trump's good for newspapers short term, But, yeah. You know, how do you feel right now about the business of newspapers? How do you feel about the Herald right now?
I mean, I think the Herald is, I think it's in the black just because of the online presence.
Yeah.
I think that's what's keeping it going. I think we're okay short term. I don't know about the long term. I don't know about anything long term.
I don't either.
I don't know about radio long term or
either.
Books or anything. You know, I mean, the technology is changing so rapidly that I don't think you can make any predictions.
Have you tried to keep up with it? I mean, in terms of your show and doing
Absolutely.
Stuff and social media and all. I mean, do you feel
yeah,
like...
Yeah, I mean, look, I have a studio. People can check it out, the Howie Cam on HowieCard.com. I mean, we're a television
studio. Yeah, you're on
studio.
TV every... What channel are you
yeah,
on every
I'm
night?
Yeah, Newsmax.
Newsmax
TV.
I see it. Yeah, it's on
yeah.
every night, right?
Yeah, every night. Yeah. I'm on for an hour. The second hour of my show is on Newsmax TV. We're on iTunes. We're on, you know, the iHeart app because I'm on some iHeart stations. I mean, you have to do that or you're not going to survive.
When did you realize that? I mean, were you
very
were
early
you
on?
To it?
I mean, I realized that when you know, when my ratings would take a hit every November, when we would lose daylight savings time, and I'm on an AM radio station.
Right.
That's the problem. That right. was the problem. I mean, you know, but the thing is now it's not even that big of a problem because so many people listen online or
right.
through their apps, and you know, the people that used to you know, write and call in and say I can't pick you up anymore, and because you know, the signal goes down in power in Boston. They don't call anymore because they have so many other ways to pick up.
So you
signal.
Feel like people in their 50s and 60s are keeping up with that too? Because I feel like they struggle with that somewhat.
They struggle with it somewhat, but I think they got kids that help them out.
That's
I
true.
Mean,
no, you're right.
I mean, for example, you know, I put the book. I was down in Florida last week, so I know the owner of the Palm Beach bookstore. He used
yeah.
to work with his. I used to work with her husband in mm-hmm. City Hall, and I put in some books. And I mentioned it twice on my show that I had books in a bookstore in Palm Beach. It sold out.
Right. Yeah.
No, they're not. I don't have a local affiliate. They're listening online.
No, we get that too now all the time, and we'll get calls from all over the country and tweets now from all over the country. You're right. It is different, and they haven't really figured that out yet from a ratings perspective. I guess. I mean, I guess to some extent, right?
I don't know how you could monetize it from a rating standpoint.
It's a good question.
I think it's just got to be direct advertising. That's what you've got to take advantage of. You know, if you sell a you know, a mattress or
right.
or Simply Safe, I mean, it doesn't matter, you know, how they heard it, as long as they buy it and they say they heard it on the Howie Carr Show.
Do you still like doing radio?
Yeah, I
you
love
do?
Radio.
Yeah? Well, I don't know. I don't like it every day. I mean, sometimes I get sick of it.
Well, you get sick of everything, but I'm talking about overall. It's great. I mean, you can turn it around so fast, and again, you have the technology. I mean, if something big happens, you guys can just switch over and pick up Fox News Channel and pick up a live direct feed of, you know, Donald Trump talking.
Right.
Or you can
oh,
see,
sure.
or the tweet comes out, and you don't have the tweet, but you see the tweet flashes up on the screen, and you can start talking about it. That's the great thing about radio as opposed to TV. You know, in TV, or at least when I was in TV, you know, you had to send out crews. You know, you have to, and what you still do to get a package, you know, tape, you know, and then you have to come back and edit it. And, you know, maybe the tape, there's a crease in the tape and you have all this problem or the mic's not working. You'd have none of that problem in radio. It's,
well, I find
it's
the immediate,
lower technology.
Right. The immediacy of it now is like a story will break for us, say whatever it is, Belichick does whatever. Not only do you get the story right away, somebody immediately will write something so stupid you can shit on that right away too. So you get the argument of that as well. It all happens so fast now.
Right.
It can happen in 15 minutes.
Right.
And all of a sudden you get a show.
Yeah, Chelsea Handler, you know, she put out that
right,
she put
thing.
Out that tweet at like 6:30, and we're talking about it at 6:45
right,
before we go off the air.
Yeah, that would have never obviously wouldn't have happened 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
What do you think of the Globe today?
It's not much there. I mean, yeah. It's just, I mean, you know, I remember when they started laying people off,
mm-hmm.
it was like a big deal. You know, and people said, who's being laid off? Is it anybody I know? Who?
Right.
Oh, wow. They
right.
laid off. Oh, I've been reading him for years. Now there's a layoff every 6 months. It's, you know, it's like they just cut the price of Tide down at Stop and Shop.
Right.
Nobody knows who anybody is. You know, it's just, and I think a lot of it is political correctness. You know, it's,
oh, no
I,
question.
I mean,
no
it's
question.
Hard. It's hard to be a columnist or, you know, a memorable writer in the old traditional sense, like a Jimmy Breslin who
mm-hmm.
just died was
mm-hmm.
in New York. because you're those people are just totally bound by the dictates of political correctness.
I feel like social media is such a big role in that too. I think people are terrified to read tweets that are negative about them, or read comments on Facebook, or get emails. They're scared, or look at comments in their stories, and it directs them to go the safe zone. I mean, it's the easiest thing in the world to do right now is to say that you hate Trump. What you're doing is tough. You are supporting Trump in this climate. It's hard to do. Be a freaking hate crime soon enough, probably. Probably go to jail. Next volume will be written in jail.
I know. Believe me, I was very concerned, I must say, before the election, about the election of Hillary Clinton, you know, because she did not have a deep commitment to the First Amendment. That's an understatement.
Do you think
to mention the Second Amendment. I mean, I didn't know what was going to happen to talk radio.
That's a good, no, I think that's a legitimate question to ask. How often do you write now still at the Herald? How many days a week?
Three or four days a week.
Usually
four, but I'm down for three, but they usually ask me to write a fourth day. So.
And you still enjoy doing that?
Absolutely. There's nothing better, even today, than having a column in a newspaper.
Because it still feels as relevant as before?
Maybe not as relevant, but I because it doesn't hit the same concentrated audience that it used to hit, you know, in Boston, just like your show doesn't hit the concentrated audience. But I would say that probably more people read my column today now than ever before, just because it's everywhere.
It's all over the country,
And, you know, you have the opportunity to go all over the world. So do I on the radio.
Right.
But everything is so diffused now, you know. It used to be when I started out in radio, you know, I'd get a call from Jerry's producer at like 2:15 and I'd say, can you come over? And I've done no research, but all I had to do was say, hey, did you see this story in the front page of the Herald?
Right.
Or did you see this story on the front page of the Globe? And everybody would have seen it.
Right.
I didn't even have to read it.
Right.
And the phone lines would be jammed, but there's nothing like that today. You got to spell it out to everybody because you don't know how everybody's getting their information.
No, it's true. I mean, you're the kind of guy, you're so prolific too. I mean, I do think for you, there's a level of insanity though. I mean, you're the kind of guy who, you know, flips his car over on the highway in the Mass Pike and writes a column that day. I mean, there's some level of, you know, insanity there.
It's just a habit.
Well, I understand, but you flipped a car over that day on the Mass Pike.
Yeah.
And filed a column like from the hospital?
No, I got out. They checked
me out. Did you ever think that at that point, you know what, maybe I'll take the day off? You know, I did, you know, I was in a serious car accident.
I like to, it helps my ratings. It helps everything for me to be in the paper every day. So that's why I do it.
Are you getting a younger audience at all now? Do you feel like the audience is getting younger because you're a little more on social media? You're a little more active. Do you feel like because I mean, at some point, you know, this is something that we've struggled with our show too, as well as we've done is, you know, these guys eventually stop working. And you got to kind of get that next generation in. Do you think about that at all or no?
I mean, I do the best I can. I mean, I think I have a fairly significant younger audience. I certainly hear from them. They call up the show.
What you have is a big female audience too.
Yeah, I do.
You do. Much bigger than ours. I know that. Women hate us. They love you. Like my mom loves you. My mom was so excited that I was interviewing you today. First podcast.
Thank you,
guest.
Mrs. Minahan.
Yes, first
I love
podcast
you too.
Ever. She was not as
keep listening to the show.
She doesn't listen to me. She listens to you. She's not as excited about Mr. Skin. She was more excited about Howie Carr, which I can understand. But there is that sort of, that, you know, 40s and 50s-year-old moms that like you.
Yeah, I hope so.
Well, what else is there in Boston in the afternoon? What else is there if somebody wants to talk politics, talk Trump, talk issues of the day?
Yeah. Well, we have, you know, we have Grace Curley on. You know, she's the associate producer. She's in her 20s, and she's doing great work on social media, writing these columns and putting in embedding videos and that kind of thing. And I think it's nice having her on the show. You know, you talk about all the hate mail. I've made it a feature of my show now on Mondays, Hate Mail Monday.
Right, you can't
go wrong. Just to deal with it, you know, because otherwise people are going, wow, Howie, did you see what somebody said about you? And, you know, I don't want to respond to everyone, so just do it in 1 5-minute stretch.
I mean, let's face it, you've been obviously had death threats clearly from some pretty serious people in your life. So I'm thinking an email is not going to bother you that much from some guy from fucking Weymouth who doesn't like your show. I could be wrong. Maybe
yeah, who's writing, especially when they're writing under a fake name.
Right. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of that. So the book is Kennedy. Let me get this right. Kennedy Babylon, A Century of Scandal and Depravity is Howie Carr.
Volume 1.
Volume 1. I'm going to say that right now. So what is the When are we hitting all the market baskets and doing the whole tour? When's the tour start?
The market basket tour starts on April 1st. We'll be in the in market baskets all over New England. You know, I'll be signing books, and those he goes to the Waltham yep. market basket. That's where I hang out. But we'll be all over the place. We'll also be doing Kennedy Babylon shows with all the pictures, and I do a presentation kind of like this with pictures.
Right.
And we have the whole schedule of the Market Basket signings and the Kennedy Babylon shows at my website, HowieCarShow.com, HowieCarShow.com. You can also order the book off of HowieCarShow.com and just click on Kennedy Babylon. You can also order it at Amazon, but that way you'll be giving money to Jeff Bezos.
You don't want
that. He's got $72 billion. Right. I just read that in Forbes the other day. I could use the money more than Jeff Bezos.
I mean, it's so nice that you personalize this to me. It says, to Kirk, much of this will be familiar to you. I don't. What are you suggesting? That the Minahan family fortune was in the same way?
No, I'm just saying you're from around here. Yes, you have an Irish surname.
Right.
That's an old line from Billy Bulger's Breakfast.
Right.
You know, so he used to say that sometimes.
What'd you think of Black Mass, the movie?
It was okay. I mean, they did what they could in 2 hours.
Right. These movies, they never get it. I mean, even like, you know, Patriot's Day, they never get it right. They never get it right.
No, you know, I sold my first book, Brothers Bulger. I optioned it to this guy in Hollywood. He was like a sort of minor producer. And he wanted to make it into what they call a long-form TV series, you know, like Sopranos or Boardwalk Empire.
Sure.
5 seasons, and they make you. What they do is when you try to sell it to the networks, they make you do out an arc for what's going to happen in the 5 seasons because they're afraid you're going to run out of gas.
Season two or three.
Exactly. And so one night we just sat at Fenway Park at a game, and I was just spelling out stories, true stories from Brothers Bulger and Hitman, and we just laid out 5 years. We could have done 5 years easy. And unfortunately, he couldn't sell it. But that would have been a better way to go.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Than 2 hours. Because at 2 hours, you're so constrained that they had too much material to work for. So to make the transitions, they had to make stuff up.
Right.
It's and weird. So that's crazy. They had too much nonfiction, so they had to go the fiction route.
John Travolta, asshole, nice guy?
He was an okay guy to me.
Yeah. One day? How many? Was that a day?
No, I spent 3 days.
Three days
with him. I had my own trailer.
Really? Was that out there?
Out there, yeah.
Yeah.
They went to, he was having trouble with the shoot on the second day. And, you know, they got a driver for me. They're giving me like $50 a day cash for my food. And then I go eat at the commissary that they've set up, which is fantastic food. Right. It's like the stockyards.
Just pocket the money?
Yeah. So I'm just pocketing the money. And then I'm at this hotel on the Sunset Boulevard, and it's got a big pool up front, and I just go out at hot tub, and I'm smoking a cigar, and I'm watching the thing at the watching the Hollywood Hills.
Yeah.
And they said, Howie, we got some bad news for you. I said, what is that? The director's alien. Steve said, you're gonna have to spend an extra day. Damn.
Now that was a good movie. That was a good adaptation, I thought. Civil Action. They did a pretty good job with that, I thought.
Yeah, they did. That did turn out to be a good movie.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Howie Carr, we'll let you go. You're not going to stick around here much longer. We made you stick around long enough. The last question I'll ask you is, how's it going to end up with Trump? What's going to happen?
I don't know. I think it's too early to tell. I tend to think he's going to work it out. He's having some problems here, obviously. This health care bill is a real mess.
Do you believe that Barack Obama tapped his phones?
I believe somebody was tapping.
But do you think it made sense for the president to go on Twitter and say that the former president was tapping his phones?
No.
Why does he do that? You know him a little bit. Why does he do shit like that?
Because I think he thinks that there was something
going
to
on.
It
right.
And that, there's no way he's going to get it out. I don't know. You know, in the old days, you know, you would have to, like, leak a story to the press.
Yeah,
and then
you
have to wait for, like, 2 or 3 days, and you have to worry. Right. Is he going to put the right spin on it that I gave him? Is it the story going to get buried in the newspaper? You know, is they going to write the proper headline? Are the networks then going to pick up the story that I leaked out? You have all this, it's almost like throwing a note, putting a note in a bottle and throwing it out and hoping it gets sustained. You know, whereas with Twitter, you get an immediate response
that.
And I think it's addicting. And I think he's gotten, and I think he wants to cut out the middlemen. And that's what it's all about. And that's why that's why he's not going to stop. And, you know, they were interviewing, I saw on Fox, they were interviewing some people in Louisville, you know, where he had the rally
yeah.
the other night. And they were asking him, you know, what do you think about this tweeting going on? And they said he shouldn't stop. He should keep tweeting. And I know, you know, the newspapers always find somebody, I voted for Trump, but I think this is very irresponsible. But I don't think that's the majority opinion among
Trump
supporters.
That's why Trump I got elected, right? I mean, again, that's the reason why
exactly.
I got elected. Yeah. All right, it's called the, I'm going to get this right. Again, Kenny Babylon, Howie Carr, A Century of Scandal, the Previous. Only volume one. So when will volume two come out? This year, next year?
Late this year or early next year.
Excellent.
Yeah. And,
come back on?
Absolutely,
yeah,
I'll come back on. And again, you can order it at Amazon, or you can order it, which I would prefer, at HowieCarrShow.com, or you can order it from Wellesley Books. It's in Wellesley Books. It's at the Bookends in Winchester. It's in the gift shop at Mass General. It's a hospital. It's in the gift shop at the Leahy Clinic. And as of Monday, it will be back in the Palm Beach bookstore.
Excellent. Howie Carr, thanks a lot.
Thanks.
See you.
I appreciate it, Kirk.
All right. Thanks again for listening to the Enough About Me podcast. Actually, you know what? I'm really not thankful at all. You should be thanking me. You get this shit every week, these great podcasts, totally free. Do me a favor. Would you go to iTunes, download it, go to Stitcher, do the same, and leave a rating, leave a review. That's where you can help me out. This podcast is going to be number one again. I guarantee it. And you're going to help me along with the process. So for that, I guess at the end, maybe I will thank you. There's a lot of thank yous going back and forth. Here's the point. Fuck you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.